Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hour number two on this Tuesday morning, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. We always enjoy our conversations with our next guest. Former Vanderbilt star, certainly a star at Station Camp High School, John Jenkins is on the line with us. John, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going, guys?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. By the way, congratulations on your first-round defeat of Steve Sullivan in our Nashville sports bracket, the best Nashville athletes in the last 30 years. But we got our voting going on right now, John. You're going to need help. You're going up against the almighty Eddie George.
I saw it, man. It's not looking too good. But like I said last time, Eddie George was a legend in my eyes. I actually met him for the first time. I didn't tell you guys this last time. I met him. I played the Cavaliers, I think maybe my second year in the league. And I guess they were having like an appreciation for Ohio athletes or whatever. And he was there, and I met him and told him how much I appreciated him and thanks for making my childhood worthwhile. So he's a great guy. I was kind of expecting this, but just to go against him in this matchup was fun for me in the first place. So it's cool. Yeah,
that's awesome. I know in the past we've talked to you. Are you still running your camps? And I know we're in unusual times, but have you still been doing that in the off seasons?
I have every single year since I've been a pro. This year, obviously, is going to be pretty tough. We haven't officially canceled or even postponed yet. It's usually in July, but we're going to have updates constantly on the Team Cash Instagram site. And also I'll be tweeting myself updates as we go along through the summer and stuff. We'll get a better answer and have more of an idea of what we can do.
Well, keep up the good work on that front for sure. Growing up, John, in Kentucky, I got to see some just people that I'll never forget the rest of my life play high school basketball and actually attend some of their games in person. I saw Rex Chapman and Sean Sutton and Richie Farmer and those guys in high school, and they just, I mean, it's just like I said, when you see that, you go, wow, that's something special. Where you were certainly in that category. You were a wow in high school. We joked about it, actually, I think last week when we were talking about it, you were like, did he, you know, I was like, didn't he average like 35 points a game, something crazy like that in high school? And we looked it up, it was like, oh, no, wait a minute. It was 42 points a game at Station Camp. Yeah. What do you remember about your days in high school?
I remember a lot, man. Now that I've had time to sitting here with the virus and everything,
right,
trying to reflect on just my career so far and other things in my life. But when I look back at those times, man, it was incredible times. The biggest thing, you know, my dad talked about and my family talked about before I went to high school in the first place was going somewhere where I could create my own legacy. And there was other great high schools around the area where I could have went, and they probably already had five or six considered legends in their school. And Station Camp was a fairly new school whenever I went there, maybe like 4 or 5 years old, if that. And my dad kind of challenged me and said, you know, you can go somewhere here and create something and leave the place better than where you found it. And that was my goal throughout my 4 years at Station Camp. I had great people, great teammates, great coaching staff. Me and Coach Massey still talk to this day about numerous things. It's just an incredible time. Other than the 42 points a game, I just love being around those guys and those people every day.
Whenever you average 42 points a game, and I think you were Mr. Basketball twice, obviously you had a lot of memories, but, and maybe this is going to be too hard to do, but if I just said to you the game that stood out to you the most was what?
I think I would say this every time, and we actually lost this game, but I think it meant so much to the Sumner County. We played against Gallatin, another Sumner County. Great school. It was my senior night, and it was a night where Vanderbilt basketball had an off night. So they most of the players came to the game. All the coaches were there. The night I had 60 points. I scored over 2,000 points that same night. A lot of things happened. We lost in double overtime to a great team. But I think it was a record breaking crowd. Like, it was just unbelievable. They had to bring the fire marshals to the game. it was probably my best game in a loss I've ever had, which wasn't a good thing. But looking back, as far as the city goes, like, it was probably the biggest night the city's ever had to this date. And I still hear about it to this day from other people when I go back home. So I would say the Gallatin game where I had 60 and had – it was senior night and I had 3,000 points that night. So that was cool.
Guys, who did we talk to last week that told that story? I'm drawing blanks. We've talked to so many people. We've had so many great interviews here in the last couple of weeks. Somebody came on here and told us that story. They were there. It wasn't free.
The whole city was there. It was absolutely crazy. I know Coach Massey, he's listening now. I know he has the film, and he can probably send you guys the game. But it was unbelievable. Like, I got chills when I came out to the starting lineups. Like, it was – I played a lot of games up to that point, but nothing like that. It was crazy.
Wow, that is awesome. So you've also
unbelievable. Yeah.
You've also, John, played over. We had this conversation with Matt Frege at the end of last week because he played overseas as well. So you've done NBA and some overseas stuff. How different is it, and what was that experience like, especially with what we're going through now? Can you imagine being stuck over there? I mean, that could have been the case and probably is the case for some athletes from here in the States.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually in China when it was going on. The first initial reaction that the world had with it, I was in China. You know, I started the year off in China this year. And my team, they were kind of like, oh, this is happening right now. We don't know this impact of it yet, but we'll keep you updated. And I said, okay, well, that's cool. My wife, meanwhile, is going nuts. She's freaking out. I'm by myself out there. And then I think maybe like 2 days later, the team called me and said, hey, we're getting you out of here tonight. And it was like maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like, wow, okay, it must be getting bad. So my team got me out right away. I was able to get home fairly easy. And then I was at home for maybe 3 weeks working out, killing myself like I always do. And then I was like telling my agent, I got to go play somewhere. I'm really itching to go play. So he got me to go to Israel. And so I went to Israel, played 2 games, and then the virus had made its way out there. And where I'm at right now is that they postponed the season and I had to come home right away. And now I'm back in Atlanta. But it's been pretty crazy, man. I only played 5 games this year because of what all happened. And, you know, it's just part of it. I'm thankful to be with my family and safe and everybody's good. So I'm looking at the bright side of things.
We're talking to John Jenkins, a legendary sharpshooter from Vanderbilt, from Station Camp High School, parts of 6 seasons in the NBA, and is still playing professionally. John, your career 3-point percentage in college was 44%. And just reminiscing here, I've got a young middle school player. He shoots on his own a lot in the backyard just by himself. I'm wondering, how did you develop your shot? What was your key to, and how many hours did you put into? Was it by yourself? Did you have somebody that was feeding you? How did you develop your shooting touch?
That's great. I'm glad you're asking that because the biggest thing I try to do for people back home, all kind of ages, is kind of impact them and let them know that anything's possible, especially the kids from Hendersonville. You know, we're a fairly small city. We're getting big now, but kids look up to all the athletes we have in our city. And I started off the same way your son is. I was outside shooting basketball. I never had like a rec center or YMCA until I got to like middle school, high school, where I actually played indoors. So for many, many years, I was outside with my dad, and he'd rebound for me, or my mom or my sister. They'd help out, and I had a bunch of friends around the neighborhood that we played 2-on-2, 3-on-3, all kind of games with, and then had the love for the game from a very young age. And I was just out there all night. And I remember my mom always told me to come inside to eat, but I always just loved the game and wanted to keep shooting. And so as I got older, my granddad took me to the Vanderbilt basketball camp. I think I was maybe like 9 years old. And Matt Frege, which he's already said his name, was one of my counselors. He was actually playing at the time at Vanderbilt. I just remember his deep voice as a young kid, like, wow, his voice is deep. And then knowing how good he was. And then now, of course, me and Frege, we know each other really well now. But just going to different camps and learning from different people. I went to Wilfredue basketball camp. I went to a ton of camps. My granddad and my dad, they always had me in those. And I think just playing day and night, you know, there was no social media back then. So I was all in on basketball.
So when you shot by yourself, because I know a lot of kids are probably faced with that right now. I mean, that's all they can do. Did you try to Was there anything you tried to focus on? Were you trying to shoot at game speed? You know, I try to tell my son, you know, don't just go out and shoot lethargically. Try to move around almost like you're in a game. Did you ever think about that?
Right. Not as much, actually. Now, of course, obviously, I have to. But when I was maybe 6, 7, 8, 9, around those ages, I was just shooting. But I would shoot so many shots. You know, it was just like my repetition was outrageous. And I was shooting so many shots. And, of course, I would go game speed. But I don't think the majority of my shots at that age were game speed. I think it was just the amount of time that I was spending on follow-through and the fundamentals of my jump shot that helped me develop along the way. And then once I got older, I started learning and understanding as I went to those camps and had great coaches along the way. They taught me how to, you know, go at this speed to get better and just develop from there.
We're talking to John Jenkins. Our only method of watching games right now is watching classic games, and it is kind of fun to look back in history. And John, on Sunday, you may have caught it, the 2012 Kentucky team, CBS showed their championship game against Kansas. And another game that's making the rounds a lot is when your team at Vanderbilt beat Kentucky in the SEC championship game. That one has been shown a bunch of times. How many times have you gone back and watched that game? I'm curious.
Oh, we actually did catch it on Sunday. That's my first time, believe it or not, ever watching the full game start to finish. I've seen highlights, but I've never watched the full game. And I did with my daughter for the first time. She saw me play, and she was going crazy. And that was fun for her and fun for me to see her enjoy it like that. It was probably the best game memory I've had at Vanderbilt because it meant so much to the program. And I think it being over 60-plus years since they'd won a tournament championship and all that, and just getting the rings and being a part of that special team. And I talked to Fest for like an hour yesterday, so I still keep up with those guys, and we talk. And I'm just thankful for the relationships that I built throughout my 3 years there. Coach Stallings and the whole coaching staff, they shaped me in my professional career. I know without those guys, I don't know what I would have done.
What's Festus up to these days?
You said that.
John, are you there? What's Festus up to these days?
He told me that he's in California. He's from Sacramento. He's in California with his family. He's trying to get as many in-house workouts as he can, and he said he's feeling good. He said he's hopefully going to be able to get onto a team this upcoming season and go from there. But he told me he's healthy and he's feeling good, and that was great for me to hear because I know how hard he works, and the adversity that he's been through the past few years, he never once gave up on himself, and that's Fest for you. He's a beast. So I'm looking forward to seeing him back on the court very soon.
He is a great guy, boy. He is so much fun to root for. John, you said you watched the game, the 2012 SEC championship game, for the first time all the way through. Was there something when you watched it you had forgotten about that you said to yourself, wow, I totally forgot about that play?
Oh, man. I do know that I started the game hot, but that was our third game in 3 nights. I led the league in minutes that year, so I was always tired. I remember that, and especially playing 3 games in a row, we had to really earn that win. I remember my legs going out on me, and it showed because in the second half, I didn't make any shots. I made maybe one or two and hit mostly free throws from there, but I remember being really tired. I remember also not really wanting to play because I had just lost my grandmother and my grandfather in like a 2 month span. And I didn't want to play. I just lost my grandmother like a week before that. And it was a tough time for my family. So if you see the game, you see my mom and my dad, they're always being shown on the screen. And my mom looks very emotional, and we all are as a family because of what was going on. But we used basketball at that time to get us through, and to get that win, you know, it just brings back so many memories. So I don't remember any type of play exactly. I remember it's kind of a blur, but I remember the celebration and then just the locker room having fun and spreading water everywhere. That was cool.
We're talking to John Jenkins, Vanderbilt basketball legend. And I'm curious of your thoughts of the direction of the program now and what you – I know you're playing and, you know, have been overseas, but what you've seen from Jerry Stackhouse as he tries to turn things around with that program.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic for sure. I talked to Coach Stack. I call him Stack, sorry. I don't call him coach because I've known him before he was a coach. But in the basketball fraternity, you cool with so many guys, and Stack was one of the people that he lives in Atlanta. Maybe not now, but before he was a coach at Vanderbilt, I've seen him all the time in gyms and different things, and he's helped me out a lot individually. So I talked to him as soon as he got the job, and you know, he expressed that it was going to take some time, and that he was all in, and he looked forward to the challenge and all that. And I just told him whatever he needed from me, you know, I'm always going to be there. And last summer, during the time of my camp, I went down there and played pickup with the guys, and I think they're going to be all right, man. The very, very least, they're going to always going to play hard, and you know, they almost had a couple games this year, took a couple tough breaks, but those close losses will turn into big wins very soon, and I'm always going to go for my guys, and I feel comfortable with Coach Stackhouse for sure, and then the rest of the staff that he has. They've done a great job of including the alumni and keeping us up to date with everything, and every team throughout their time is going to have up and down years, and it's a little rough patch for us, but you know, I believe Stack will get us back going.
And what about Candace Story Lee? She's the interim athletic director. Obviously, a lot of ties to the university, played there, has been there for a long time. And it's kind of like now there's a balance of some new ideas with her, but also, you know, her relationship that she had with David Williams and having had been in the athletic department for a long time. That has to be good to have that balance.
Yes, it's very good. And I told her the same thing as soon as she got the job, that whatever she needed, she had my full support. I know a lot of other athletes said the same thing. So she's been there when I was going on my visits. She was there and always helping and talking to my parents and being very comforting throughout the whole process. So I'm so happy for her and her family and what she's going to do for the school in general. I'm just very excited.
Darren?
John, we appreciate the visit. Good luck the rest of the way today. Maybe put something out on Twitter. Get your fans to get in there and start voting. We know Eddie's...
Yeah, I need the whole state on this one.
Well, hey, every little bit helps.
This is a tough one. This is a tough one.
No doubt about it. Hey, you and your family be safe. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, guys. Have a good one.
All right, you too. That is John Jenkins, Johnny Cash, VU23. On Twitter, former Station Camp great and Vanderbilt great. And right now, just in unusual times, trying to make his way back into the NBA. I want to talk to you about USS, United Structural Systems, a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served our area here in Middle Tennessee since 1994. That's a long time, and they have a lot of satisfied homeowners, about over 18,000 to be exact. And maybe you've been knowing, you know, or you've been noticing, we've had a lot of rain in 2020, that you've got some bowing basement walls or you've got some standing water in your crawl space. Remember I said this is a waterproofing company. Musty odors or rot in floor joists, condensation on ductwork, cracks in basement floors. Like, all these are signs that your house is probably telling you something. Something is wrong. Something needs to get fixed. Something needs to be addressed, and that's where USS comes into play. They are the experts, and they believe in their quality of work. They believe in their reputation and the integrity of their work. All those things are important to them, and they're going to come out and they're going to assess the situation and tell you exactly what's going on. And if you need something repaired, they're going to give you a free estimate. They're locally owned and licensed and insured, and as a homeowner, that should get you to perk up. If you need the experts out to your house, call 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275. Or you always can go to their website, usstn.com, to find out or learn anything about them. And as they say, we guarantee our best. Call USS. We'll talk to Gil Capps at the bottom of the hour. Golf has made some announcements. We'll talk to him about that. They were in the news yesterday. Right now, Major League Baseball has been actively considering numerous contingency plans that will allow them to play and commence once the public health situation has improved. This is an actual release and statement from them. Has improved to the point that it is safe to do so. While we have discussed the idea of staging games at one location as one potential option, we have not settled on that option or developed a detailed plan. While we continue to interact regularly with government and public health officials, we have not sought or received approval of any plan from federal, state and local officials, or the Players Association. The health and safety of our employees, players, fans, and the public at large are paramount, and we are not ready at this time to endorse any particular format for staging games in light of the rapidly changing public health situation caused by coronavirus. So Major League Baseball out there and the union, they're trying to put some plans together of possibly getting things going in May. This is probably the first piece of real positive news, if that were to take place, because I feel like we've been focused on June, you know, maybe even July, and here's Major League Baseball throwing out May. It's going to take one. I've asked this question before on the show. Who's going to be the first to jump out there and say, we're back, and here's a potential date? And once they do that, that's where I think the whole sports landscape changes, because I think we're waiting to see who's going to be that first.
Well, there's a good article. Jeff Passan, who has been pretty much following this for ESPN for a good while now, formerly of Yahoo for a long time. He's a very good reporter. He's got a lot of the details on this. It would be in Arizona is where they would try to set up shop. I guess they've been talking to federal officials at the CDC. They've been working with a lot of the local governments. You know, you have a complex down there. That's the thing. We talked to Tony Kemp about this. He spent a lot of his career with the Astros, who train in Florida. And then, of course, when he got moved over to Oakland, he goes through spring training out in Arizona with the A's. In fact, I've been to an A's spring training game with a bunch of the Predators a couple of years ago. Sonny Gray happened to be pitching that particular day. But what you find out is when you drive around down there, a lot of the fields are very, very close together. You can get from one complex to another very easily. You've got a lot of fields to work with. And, of course, you know, a spring training complex, as I can tell you, you know, they've got a ton of fields, right? If you're having no fans, then it's pretty easy to get a field. But I think the key would be you got to have fields that would be able to have the cameras set up to televise, right? That's the key, is you want to televise these games. So you have to have a facility that can do that. But I think they would find that there's enough to do that. And then the next question is all those logistical questions we've been trying to sift through ourselves and try to figure out how would you do that? You know, keep everybody sequestered? You know, would you be able to have your family with you? I guess you could if you only saw them and your teammates and everybody is healthy. But these are a lot of things that you wonder, how that would work. And if you had one person get sick, is that all it would take to have the dominoes going through everybody? That would be the worst-case scenario.
What would you give this percentage-wise of actually being a reality?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I think it's low by May, right? May is a little early, don't you think? Maybe June, you know, just keep sorting through all these things one by one. And with each passing day, hopefully we learn more about the virus and we gather more data on what can be done safely.
Well, I'm talking about just this model. Let's not even get caught up in
I think this is the model that everybody is going for, right? I don't think it's any secret. Everybody knows that there's no way you're going to be playing normal in your stadium.
I mean, Dana White wants to find
an island. This is the one model. So, unless you have access to an island that apparently Vince McMahon does, this is what they're going to try to work through here. So I think they're going to put a lot of resources into trying to do it, but I don't know. We'll see. May seems very, very early to me.
To answer your question, Darren, I'll say 60% that it has a chance of happening right now. If you're telling me that we're not putting a timetable on it, we're just saying that it has a chance for a season to get underway, because I think they're being forced to think this way. You know, that's something that we've talked about on the show, of just that now everybody's mindset has changed and gone to a place that it's never had to go before, because we've never had any situation like this. And so now you have to think outside the box. And the statement today for Major League Baseball kind of tells me that they've definitely had these conversations. They definitely have plans on the table. They weren't ready to talk about it yet, and it got out. And so now they have to play damage control, and they have to comment on it. But I think they're very early in the process of doing that right now. But I think they're going to pull something off because I almost think they have to. They know that, you know, the president of the United States doesn't meet with the major heads of sports if he doesn't, you know, have an interest and an investment in it from a country standpoint. And I think getting sports back can help stimulate the economy in different ways, even though you're not having fans. There's advertising, there's TV revenue, there's things like that that I think could help some things. So that's why I believe that it's going to happen, but I put 60% right now.
There's just no way I could go 60%. I mean, I get it. They want to have a season, and you do have to think outside the box. I mean, there's no doubt. There is nothing but truth to that. But I just go back to, you know, it's one thing for the UFC. It's a much smaller deal if you're just talking about having a card, a UFC 249 on an island or in a secluded place. That's a small operation. Much smaller operation. Right now, what wrestling is doing, it's a smaller operation. How do you get 30 Major League Baseball teams and all that entails with that? By the way, those rosters, how many is on a roster? And then who?
26.
Who's got to take care of all the fields? I mean, there's got to be maintenance workers. There's got to be people there, as you said. It's got to be shown on television. I mean,
umpires.
There's umpires. I mean, there's all kinds of – it is a much bigger production. And what? So they all just
– Yeah, it's a lot of
when
people.
You sign up
Think
for
about
that,
this too, guys.
You just go and
you said,
the
how many
broadcasters
people on a team?
Kiss their families goodbye and the umpires and everything. We'll see you at the end of the year. I mean I just don't know how you pull that off. I know you have to think outside the box. I know you have to do things differently, but how in the world do you pull off that big of a production in a place like spring training sites and Arizona in the Phoenix area? If you've ever been in the Phoenix area, it's basically like within 45 minutes. I don't know what the miles are. What would you say? 30-mile radius? There's a lot of stuff going on. It's spread out. Actually, it's probably bigger than 30 miles. It's more like 60 miles. 60-mile radius.
I don't even know. I don't think it's that far. Maybe from the furthest to the furthest.
Well, I'm talking about Tempe and Scottsdale and, you know, all that stuff. Glendale. I mean, how far is Glendale from downtown Phoenix? 45 minutes?
Well, with the traffic, it is.
Yeah,
but if there's no traffic, which now
that's
everybody's sheltered at home, it's probably a little easier to get there. Now they've opened up a new highway. You hear a lot of things about what they're trying to do out there to keep people moving better. But, of course, there are enough of the parks, I think, from what I understand about it, it's clustered enough into one area. If you just took Tempe or you just took Scottsdale, you could have a lot of teams around there. It's just a theory. Here's another thing that you mentioned I thought about while you were talking about this, Darren, was it's a 26-man roster, but guys are going to get hurt. So you have to have
right.
– and I guess the minor leagues aren't going to be
what?
Playing. So what do you do? How do you have the next wave of guys ready to play? Or do you have a 35-man roster and you designate 26 guys and have the other guys just, you know, stay in shape on the sideline?
I think you have to bring your 40 man.
There's all kinds of things.
Or is it a 40 man?
Maybe it's the 40 guys. Yeah,
like they have to be there,
man,
right?
But
like you can't bring in outsiders. That's impossible.
That's a good point though. I think you have to look at it as okay, you're going to have your 40 man roster. You only have 26 active, and the rest are doing extended spring training or whatever you want to call it, but. Because you're not going to be able to field minor league teams and all of that in that space. But I think you're going to have bigger rosters than 26 in order to pull this off. Look, there are a lot of logistics involved in this, guys. I mean, there's no other way to put it. But as I said, I applaud them for at least thinking about it, having discussions, having, you know, the Players Association, the league, they're getting together and they're realizing that, we have to figure this out. We have to come to some sort of solution. Maybe we won't be able to. Maybe this is just going to be too tough to pull off. I read this morning that they've looked at the idea of possibly having, you know, robot umpires and, you know, doing everything electronic, calling balls and strikes that way. I don't love that idea, but I know that's been tossed out there before of testing that, you know, for the near future. So that cuts down on personnel if they were to look at that. But, you know, who knows how that's going to shake out.
We'll continue this discussion, but we'll have to pause because, honestly, our next guest, I think their sport has got a better chance of pulling it off than most. I mean, golf, to me, has a better chance than some. I just think the production level, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, I mean, it is a massive, massive production to try to pull off what we're talking about. Golf, on the other hand, they go to one place and they can keep their distance. You know, obviously there's no fans. I think golf courses, by the way, are open. Go drive around. If you're going around, there's still people are golfing playing right now. Okay. Just go look. I drove by one yesterday. I had to go to Cool Springs after the show and I drove right by the Nashville Golf and Athletic Club and they're playing golf. I drove by Governor's Club.
Distancing.
They're playing golf. Yeah.
Right? In theory, if as long as you're on your toes and conscious of keeping the distancing, I think you could play, right?
No doubt. We'll talk to Gil Capps from the Golf Channel on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back around Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. Hope everybody's having a good day thus far. We always enjoy our conversations with Gil Capps, the author of The Magnificent Masters, also a part of Golf Channel's broadcast, NBC Sports, and Gil is now on the line with us. Gil, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. I hope you guys are healthy and staying safe and all good in Nashville.
It is a first, Gil. We've been doing this, Willie and I especially have been doing this a long time, and we've never had shows, which is now, I think, show 14, four-hour show 14, all in three different locations. Actually, four, technically, if you count our producers. So, but we've pulled it off. It hasn't been a problem. It's just been strange. we're all dealing with a strange time, no doubt.
Well, we are in the same boat down here. I've been working at home for 4 weeks, and you know, one of the things, I'm sure everybody—it's everybody's, right? It's what this has done to your normal routine, not just your daily routine or your weekly routine, but your yearly routine. Because right now, my biological clock, you know, says I should be 7 hours north of where I am right now in Augusta, Georgia.
Yep.
You know, Tuesday of the Masters with about 8 to 10 people coming in the media room and lots of news and stories and the excitement of getting ready for that first round of the Masters in 2 days, but not happening right now.
No, and yesterday your sport was in the news because there's been kind of a reshuffling of these major events. And as you said, the Masters has now been moved to November, U.S. Open. So we've seen all these now. British Open, of course, I don't think it's called the British Open anymore, the Open. That's been canceled, right? They're just going to move it to 2021, and it's going to remain at Royal St. George's. But what do you make of this? Because I said, Gil, in the last segment, you know, as baseball and hockey and the NBA and even football is thinking about all this stuff of creative ways to get their sports back and to pull this off, to me, in wrestling and the UFC's kind of been sticking to their guns and trying to figure out ways to keep their sport going. I feel like golf can pull it off better than most. What do you think? What, you're a guy that's right in the middle of this stuff. How hard would it be to pull off continuing on with the tour of no fans and the golfers, you know, staying a safe distance? How hard would it be to pull it off?
I think it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for whoever pulls the lever and goes first, right?
Yes.
And I think there was a little bit of pushback yesterday, you know, about this, and with golf kind of maybe we jumping the gun because, you know, everybody else is still kind of in a wait and see attitude, wait and see mode, even though a lot of stuff's going on behind the scenes, right? And we had that ESPN report this morning, which you guys may have talked about Major League Baseball out in Arizona and what they may potentially be thinking about doing just to get play going and get their game back on TV. It's the same with golf. Golf being a little different because, you know, it's not, you don't have home games and away games. It's like a traveling circus. So I understand on one hand, Goff cannot wait until everything's got the okay and the all clear and be like, all right, we're going to play again next week. You can't do that. There's so many logistics and at these places to get these tournaments going. There has to be a lot of planning and a lot of foresight. Moves can't be made, at the snap of a finger. So I understand needing to do a lot of schedule. My question just being, are we really going to be playing in San Francisco at a PGA Championship in early August? And if so, will we have fans? And then if so, who's going to be playing? Because it's the other question I have, with Goff, we're looking at players who are independent contractors. And we saw at the Players' Championship last month when we were trying to keep the game going, as all the other cancellations were going on around us, we had one player, C.P. Pander, who was uncomfortable being there and pulled out. And now knowing what we know and knowing what's happened throughout our country and throughout the entire world, are you going to have some players who don't need to come back financially and can't be told to come back, going to come back? I'm thinking about the name players, the top superstars in the game. Are they going to be willing to come back and start playing in June, July, et cetera? Even if we do still have some social distancing going on at these events, even if there are no fans, even if they are traveling by private plane, are they going to do that? We'll wait and see.
Talking to Gil Capps, talking a little golf here. And Gil, there's no question. We spent a lot of time on our show, hoping that, these leagues and these organizations might be able to pull something off like that, so we have, something to quench our thirst sports-wise here. And we were talking to Brant Snedeker about these things, too. You point out a lot of really interesting logistical questions and hurdles that you'd have to get through. One thing I've heard about as well is just sort of a made-for-TV one-on-one between a couple of guys, a couple of popular players, maybe even, two different ones on the same day. What would you think of that? No fans, just cameras following two players playing a round of golf and maybe, put some money up for charity or something like that. Do you think that could be in the cards?
It could be. I think there is, as much as we want to see something, we want to see live sports. And the other thing, right, is that everybody's at home and – anything that's going to be put on in sports-wise is probably going to get a pretty good rating and get pretty good attention put toward it. The danger is that doing stuff like that, even if you think you're taking all the precautions in the world, it still comes across in an incorrect tone with the times that we are in. And that's a particular concern with the sport I love and golf, and I think it's the greatest individual sport in the world. I don't think anything comes close, but not everybody has that feeling about it. There are people who see it in a different light, see it maybe as an elitist, upper class male sport that's only for a few, and that we've seen that in this during this pandemic and during all the stay-at-home orders with golf courses fighting to stay open and people going to play golf. Golf Now, our tee time business, the largest in the U.S. at Golf Channel, 60% of the golf course in the U.S. is still open. And while to people play the game and think, well, that kind of makes sense. If you don't have any contact with anybody, facilities are closed, you can just to go out there and play the game. But, to others who kind of don't understand, it does send a bad message. And I think that's the danger, as the rumors with the Tiger Phil match possibly, with having maybe Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Not that it's a bad idea, but I just think that optics are really also important. And while you may have a percentage that would really afford to that, you're going to have a percentage you're really going to take exception to it. And if it's a big enough percentage, that really worries sponsors and really worries TV folks.
That's a really interesting point that I think you would have probably continued debate on for a while. I do wonder, too, Gil, if in a month we would feel differently one way or the other, right? Maybe in a few weeks we feel like, maybe we're more optimistic about wanting to see something now, and maybe we go the other way. We don't want to see anything in a few months, but maybe at a certain time, too, we'll feel like, the curve is, or the peak has happened, some of the terminology you hear, and then maybe the time is right then. That's what I guess the leadership has to decide.
You're right. I mean, there'll be a time where we'll see that light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, right now, I think there's still uncertainty whether that light at the end of the tunnel is actually light, or if it's the headlight of a train that you're ready to set on. But there will come that time. And I think, the one thing, like I said, Goff hadn't determined, they have to kind of be ready. There has to kind of be a schedule. And, the one thing that it does give you when all the governing bodies make the announcement they did, yesterday, it gives people hope, gives people a little optimism, puts Goff back in their brains. And I have to say, there was a little bit of a spark yesterday myself thinking, wow, how cool would a Masters in the middle of November be? Not to see azaleas, but to see colors, on the trees, and maybe see the golf course play a little differently, wind directions and fronts coming in a little differently. And ringing in the holiday season with the most famous tournament in the game, it'd be pretty cool. And it kind of puts a smile on your face thinking about it. I certainly hope that we're there in the middle of November.
We're talking to Gil Capps from Golf Channel. And I feel like sometimes, Gil, we're forced to make change, like a tradition like the Masters that is always in April that you were bringing up, that this is forcing golf to make a change, and so it could happen in November. Do you think that there's a chance because of all this that they might look at rotating the schedule a little more, that maybe, okay, it wasn't so bad having the Masters in November or a different month, maybe not that late, but maybe moving things around, it kind of changes the way of thinking?
I never say never. I have a hard time seeing the Masters in the way a private club that isn't open during the summers, in the way it's run and set up, in the way that bent grass is that they play on, which is a cool season grass, which is one of the concerns having that event in the fall, is that you may not have the coverage you do in April, and particularly maybe there are issues, and maybe it's a late summer, it's a hot summer, a warm fall, but otherwise, I think things could be on the table, and we hear that other sports, right? People are starting to speculate how this pandemic and what it's done to the sports calendar, and maybe what comes out of it too, right? What other leagues are forced to do, whether it's baseball or whether it's the NBA, and how they proceed, could make them rethink things going forward, and how games are in a season, how playoffs are structured, how their seasons run, et cetera. So, Goff in particular has usually been a follower. Everybody's fighting nowadays for the same airtime, the same attention on social media, and nobody kind of wants to go on top of each other. So I think Goff has kind of always been more of a reactionary sport as far as planning out where it's going and just looking to see what happened with the PGA Tour last year that started with having the playoff events moving from September to August. That was to get out of football and to try to have a month to itself. Well, if things kind of change around, right? Say the NBA has a great idea. You know what? We want to change our schedule. We want to start now. We're going to play our first game on Christmas Day, and our playoffs are going to go through, the finals can go through to August. that affects Goff. So maybe something does happen down the road, and we get our sport kind of gets the worst end of that, and maybe not the pick of the litter as far as calendar, but the other point is the fall, late summer, early fall, if all things go to plan, you know, you can have sporting events some of these weekends where I'm going to be doing the same thing I'm doing now. I'm going to be staying at home because I'm going to be watching sports from 9 a.m. to midnight. You're going to have possibly football games and tennis and golf and horse racing and auto racing and, you know, multiple major championships and major events and sports on the same weekend or same day potentially. So I think it for sports fans, it's famine right now, but fingers crossed it may be feast come fall.
Gil, we appreciate the visit as always. You and the family be safe. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You guys as well.
All right, that is Gil Capps from the Golf Channel, and wanted to get a little golf perspective because they were in the news yesterday, and you know, moving some things around, moving some major tournaments around, and we'll see how this all plays out. I got to be honest, if the Masters actually happens in November, what was it, November 12th through the 15th, that's mid-November, that'll be strange. I mean, that'll be really strange. In fact, I think when I was looking at the schedule yesterday, Tennessee plays – no, that can't be right. That couldn't be right. Tennessee plays Georgia. They don't play that late, do they? But CBS will have to shuffle some things around because think about it. They've got the SEC game of the week on Saturday, and they've got the NFL on Sunday. So how do they make that work?
Yeah, look, I mean, everyone's going to have to get creative. But, you know, for a sports fan, it could be a lot of fun. But, you know, I think they have the network space to pull this out. And, you know, somebody like CBS that doesn't get a lot of traction on the CBS Sports Network, it might force them to do that of, you know, you have to go find it to watch one of these events or a football game or something like that. I was trying to pull up
Tennessee. By the way, actually, it is Tennessee-Georgia. I did look at it.
November 14th.
That's weird. That's a little bit – that's late for that game. That's the second to last game of the season.
It's after Kentucky, which is
– that is really weird.
Yeah. It's usually early.
Usually they've got, like, Kentucky, Missouri.
We might need ESPN
Vanderbilt.
The Ocho. We might need a real ESPN Ocho.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
By the way, that could be – I mean, who knows what that'll look like in mid-November. That could be the game of the week on CBS. Who knows?
Yeah.
Tennessee-Georgia may be the game. So what do they do? Do they put the Masters on CBS Sports Network? I mean, what do they do?
Well,
they're not moving college football or the NFL.
Yeah, but you can move – like if Tennessee-Georgia is the game of the week, you could have a 7 o'clock kick and pull it off.
Well, 7 o'clock at night. CBS doesn't air 7 o'clock at night college football games.
Well, you
it's
have
the 2:30 game.
No, I understand, but you're having to change. We're talking about if
they,
you want to get them both
in. They have a
couple
each year, though. They've had some doubleheaders. LSU-Alabama's been a primetime game at times.
I mean, in this scenario, Darren, nothing's normal. So you're going to have to adjust. And if CBS wants to have both events, if they want to still have the game of the week and they want to have the Masters, then – you're probably going to have to air your college football game.
And what if it's still going on? You're just going to cut away?
Well,
what if there's an intense moment? You're going to cut. Now let's go to Athens, Georgia, and we're ready for kickoff for Georgia and Tennessee?
Yeah, then you have another problem on your hands.
I don't see how you pull that. I don't know how you pull. To me, look, the Masters is great. I get it. It's the sacred cow of golf. But you know, holding this in November in the middle of football season – in the college football season and the NFL season, especially in November when things are getting real. We're talking about playoffs could be on the line. Who knows what the teams look like at this point. This is the second-to-last game of the season for Tennessee. I don't know how you could put them every – you make it all work on one network. To me, something's got to get moved, and either – if you're asking me who's going to CBS Sports Network – it's not going to be college football in the NFL. Sorry.
No.
Just not.
If you're looking for the Masters, you can check that out on News Channel 5 Plus.
Well, no, I mean, they've got CBS Sports Network. That's,
I know. That was the
That's bigger than 5+. I mean, I don't want to take shots at 5+, but I'm just saying that's bigger. That CBS Sports Network is a viable option. Look, if you could have NCAA tournament games on True TV, you could certainly have the Masters on CBS Sports Network.
Sure. And like I said, that could open the door to get more out of CBS Sports Network or NBC Sports Network. I mean, you're having to put higher profile events on those channels, and so it might get, you know, more viewership. It could work in their favor.
Well, that's what ESPN's been doing. They've been forcing everybody, right? Like, fine, yeah. We're putting the national championship game on cable, so you're going to be forced to have our channel.
And you know, for Fox, for instance, you know, they might be forced to put some NFL games on FS1, which I think is what they wanted when they launched FS1, and you know, it's never happened. But I mean, that's what's, if everybody wants to get all this stuff in, you have the space to do it. You're just going to have to change. You're going to have to put it on a different channel than you're used to doing, but they could pull it off. They just have to be willing.
All right, we will come back. Hour number three, when we come back, of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car look in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.